Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the past couple of weeks in the video game industry. We try to give you a look at what has been happening, what important stuff has been happening, and with a little bit of analysis when it's relevant. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm coming to you live from Japan. That's the reason I didn't do a show last time. Apologies for that. I even got a couple of messages from people who were missing the show. Thank you very much. So we're not going to cover everything that's happened in the past month, but we are going to cover some of it, especially since we have two wonderful guests that are going to be able to give us perfect analysis of stuff like why we should, as my understanding is, cancel our pre-orders for VR. Right, Jeff Kanata?
Mine arrives tomorrow, so I did not cancel.
You didn't go through with not going through with it.
No, I can't. I'm so excited about VR. Are you kidding me? I had a guest on my show who was trying to get me to cancel my
pre-orders. I know, that's why I said that, yeah.
I'm not going to do it. No, my Vive arrives tomorrow, hopefully. That's what the FedEx tracking number tells me.
Yeah.
No, it's not a tracking number.
Yeah, a tracking number would be terrible.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be the number I have for my Oculus pre-order, is a nice tracking number, because every time I check it, it's a different date.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
And that voice that you're hearing is that of the amazing Scott Johnson, which is your traveling circus name, I believe. How's it going, amazing?
It's very the big tent introduction here. No, I appreciate that. It's always good to be on here, dude. I'm happy to be on, and I hope you're doing well in Asia so far. I'm sure they love you there.
Oh, well, I don't know if they love me. I've gotten a few, weird looks as a foreigner, although, you know, there's so many foreigners now. I don't know if it's because I'm living close to the Kyoto station, but it feels like there's so many more than when I was living here. It was 15 years ago, but it's weird. You know the weirdest thing about this country nowadays? Try to take a guess. No, no tentacles video. Exactly.
Underpants in
in vending machines.
Yeah,
that is pretty weird. Yeah, it is. And I can confirm that's not an urban legend, by the way. I saw a vending machine selling underpants, used underpants, no less. But that was 15 years ago, and I don't think they've changed that, defining characteristic of their society. But no, the other thing is they don't play video games. It's so disappointing. They basically have almost no games in their arcades. They have like UFO catchers and the little catching machines, rhythm games, but no proper actual gamer games. And the other thing is they don't have 3DSs. I've seen maybe one in the subway over the past 2 weeks. It's incredibly disappointing. So
the gaming landscape is changing over there, it seems like. And it feels like it's all, like, tell me of these pachinko machines. Is that, I keep hearing those are everywhere. Is that illegal? Is that like a gambling thing? Or what the hell is a pachinko machine?
So a pachinko machine is basically a mix between a slot machine and a pinball. And you basically throw dozens and hundreds of balls into the thing, and you're supposed to change the strength of the sling thing that throws them in the machine, and then they bounce on little pins, and if they fall in the right hole, then you earn more balls, and then you can exchange the balls for it's little metal, pebbles, and then you can exchange them for gifts, which are like little anime figures or teddy bears or stuff like that. And at that point, you're like, what use is this for? Why is it illegal? Well, it turns out when you have those little gifts, you can turn around, go to a little shady shop 2 meters away from the giant pachinko thing and exchange that quote-unquote gift for money, that where, you know, they buy the thing. So basically, it's a gambling thing. It's completely run by the mafia, by the Yakuza. And yeah, it's been going on forever.
I had no idea. I thought this was like a big Konami thing. That's why they were giving up video games, because they were getting all into the pachinko business.
Well, I'm sure they are too. And you know, the mafia, there are so many of them that the mafia needs to buy them somewhere. So yeah, they are still doing that. But yeah, it is not video games. It's something else. It's I'm not sure. I don't really like it. It's not people who enjoy video games who play those. So yeah. Anyway, so that's that. And then talking about 3DS, there are no 3DSs, but Nintendo is getting to cell phones. I guess they have to. Miitomo has been out for a few weeks. I've been playing it. It's been downloaded like, I don't know, millions of times. It's making hundreds of thousands of dollars for Nintendo every week. I don't really like it. Do you guys, have you fallen in love with those silly little Miis that go around and tell people what they think?
I hate it. Have you not even, Jeff, have you downloaded it even at this point?
I downloaded it, and then I never really even tried it. I downloaded it because everybody was downloading it. It was, oh my goodness, everybody's downloading it. And I don't think I've even opened the app on my phone once. So
well, it's not that different on my end. I kind of went like, oh, the zeitgeist is everybody's getting this, and it's a Nintendo thing, so I probably should get it. And then I messed with it for a few minutes, laughed at the voice modulator thing, and then I kind of hate it and I don't want to pick it up again. I find it just really obnoxious and not a game at all, and I don't find it all that social either. It's got all the problems Nintendo always seems to have with social and friends lists, and you know, people having to dig up their old Nintendo membership thing and, well, which one is it? Is it the one to the old store or the new store? And you know, you should be able to just search Twitter or check your contacts or something.
You can't do that. You can't.
The Twitter thing I don't think was there at launch anyway. Maybe it is now, but it wasn't there when I tried it.
Okay.
It annoyed the hell out of me because I was like, well, I got like 3 friends and this is dumb, and I quit playing it.
Okay, so you're not in love with Miitomo.
No.
Okay, Jeff either, me either. There are a lot of people using it, but I think it's one of those things where you have the diehard Nintendo fans that go, oh my god, I want to play it because it's Nintendo, and as you were saying, but I'm not sure I've seen a lot of people actually thinking that it was an awesome experience. So
I don't know what the intent of it is, other than, I mean, this is their first foray into mobile, and it's probably an easier way in than them developing a full scale, I don't know, Mario experience or something. So, you know, I think it's fine for what it is, and it may be, it's probably, you know, tailor made for somebody, but I just don't think it's.
No, I think it's to test their infrastructure. It's the thing they're developing with DNA. It's, you know, an easy way and an actual app that's going to make money. But it's mostly to test their network, their infrastructure, making sure things are up to speed before they launch the actual, you know, Mario or Zelda or whatever game that is going to be downloaded, not just millions, but dozens of millions of times. I think that's the intent there.
Dozens of millions. it's interesting. I feel like there's these things that come and go so quickly. You know, everybody was into My Idol for a while, and then everybody was into Bitmoji, and then, you know, there's like these little social things that are big flashes in the pan. Everybody's got to download and put themselves in the thing and send 100 little, you know, Instagrams of their little character doing a stupid, silly thing. And Miitomo kind of did that for about a week, and now I don't really see it anymore. I feel like these things they're fun diversions for a while, but they're not really much meatier than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know when the last time there was one where it's really stuck. Maybe it was something like, I don't know, maybe Snapchat, Instagram, those sorts of things held, but there've been a billion since, and then now these things that are more quirky, like face swapping and stuff, they have no shelf life.
Yeah,
maybe that's just the nature of mobile, and you get the money you can while you can, and then you get out and do another one, I guess.
Well, in gaming at least, I think the problem is we haven't seen real gamer games, or very few of them. You know, when you have them, they are pretty sticky. I'm thinking of things like, well, obviously Hearthstone, but that's kind of a, you know, a side thing. But things like Hero Academy, for example, was an awesome game. Everyone played it for a good 6 months, and I think it held up. We're seeing Capcom has announced that they're getting serious about mobile games. They've announced that, you know, all right, now mobile games is an important thing. And I think seeing the landscape in Japan, I sort of understand it. It's like everyone, you know, all they do is they have more mobile phones usage than we do in the West, for different reasons. But, yeah, I think the fact that serious game companies are getting into this means that hopefully we're going to see some more gamer games and less, you know, pastime, time waster games like the Candy Crush and all of those crappy.
But that's not really what people want on their phones. I don't even think I want a gamer game on my phone. I think that's what you'd want is a time waster. You know, I think there are more quality time wasters. Like, you know, I was really into Threes for a while, and I just don't think that I'm looking for a game that I'm going to, you know, hunker down and really concentrate on my phone, because what I want to play on my phone is a game that I can play while I'm standing in line at the grocery store, or, you know, have sitting in a doctor's waiting room and, you know, need to fill 20 minutes. That's really what I want out of my phone, I think.
Well, what it's fun to watch things like Clash Royale bridge the gap a little bit, because they've created a game that fits that quick game while I'm standing in line or waiting at the dentist office or whatever. But it's also super intense and now in sort of esports circles to some consternation of some players. But nonetheless, you know, there's competitive tournaments. I know it's super dumb, but there's some, you know, competitive tournaments going on, and there people are super, super into it and kind of quote unquote hardcore about Clash Royale. But the simple fact of that game is it can be played in these short bursts. And that's maybe the holy grail. I don't know who's going to reach it. Maybe that's what this is, and they've reached it. But I think the goal is, like, what matches that playstyle, which I completely agree with, and then also keeps you coming back for those short bursts. And games like that seem to have started to figure it out. There are a bit, the problem is there's a glut that never do, and there's, you know, they just clutter up the store and die after a week of interest. So it's a weird, what a weird place mobile is anyway.
I think, you know, there's a little bit, we're looking at mobile as if, you know, we're looking at gamer games on mobile as if they had to appeal to the immense population that plays on mobile. I think it's a subset, you know, gamer games would be a subset, not of people who would all of a sudden start playing, you know, Dark Souls while they're waiting at the doctors, but rather people who used to be playing on their 3DS or their, the few who were playing on their PlayStation Vita. You know, I think there is a place for those people. And you're right, Scott. It is that the best example I've seen is possibly Clash Royale, which is actually very different in my mind from something like Candy Crush, because Candy Crush really isn't, I don't think you could call it a gamer's game. Clash Royale, it does require skill. You do get better at it. You have strategy. It's gameplay-wise, it's very well-crafted. So I think there's a spot for that, and I think it's going to be very interesting if, I would like to say when, but I think I need to say if, some real gamer companies like Capcom and Nintendo and others start making games for mobiles that are not in the time waster category, but maybe in the in-between, or even, I mean, Jeff, you're saying you don't want that, but have you ever played on a 3DS on the train, or, you know, a serious game on your 3DS?
I live in Los Angeles. We don't have trains.
You never get on planes ever?
Just bad traffic.
No, I enjoy mobile gaming, and I like those meteor experiences. I find myself sort of desiring that less and less, but because I'd much more rather just open up my Kindle or you know, watch a movie on my iPad or something. But you know, when those great games come out, you know, a lot of people are trying to get me to try the one you guys are talking about, which I have not done yet, because Clash I'm afraid Royale? I'll actually get Clash Royale. Because I have a bunch of friends who are into it, and I'm afraid I'll get really into it. But yeah, you know, I play a lot of Hearthstone on the go, and that stuff. It's when those games grab hold, they really do grab hold well. But I just don't know. I guess I associate gamer game, as you called it, with something a little more time consuming and sort of narrative based and stuff. But I think you're right. These sort of in between games that offer a beefy experience, have some role playing hooks, have some stuff to shoot for. They can hook in, you know, serious gamers for sure.
Yeah. If I ended up buying a controller, Patrick, can you believe that? But controller for my, I got an iPad Pro and I thought, hey, wouldn't this be cool if I had a controller to go with it? Because a lot of games started coming with that default stuff built into it. And I thought, yeah, this will bridge my gap between mobile and hardcore. And I can find games where control is the problem. And therefore, that'll extend the life of the games. And it didn't really.
Yeah. I was sort of convinced that this would help. Actually, I think there's some of what Jeff said. Basically, when you're in, you know, not public transport, in Los Angeles, that doesn't exist, in the train or in the plane, you really just feel like watching a movie or something. So, yeah.
The truth about me, honestly, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. It may be a bad thing. But the truth about me is that when I game at this point in my life, I tend to want the best possible experience. And that means, you know, in front of my big screen TV or in behind my PC with the settings cranked up to the max, or, you know, when I really want to hunker down and play or, you know, put on the VR goggles or whatever, I want to play games in a setting that is the most impressive and I'm completely, my attention is completely on the game, which is why I find myself mobile gaming less and less.
So basically, you're only going to be playing on your HTC Vive from now on, which hopefully you will be getting at some point in the not too distant future. Because what we heard, really, are you sure though?
I'm getting mine tomorrow. That's what the tracking number says. I'm getting it tomorrow.
The tracking number says so. Yeah. So basically, there's been issues in manufacturing and delivery for both the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift. A little bit more serious on the Oculus Rift side. It seems that the shipments have been delayed for weeks, if not months. It's sort of a little bit surprising because everything seemed to be in place, but I guess they are both sort of, I mean, HTC is used to manufacturing consumer products. Maybe Rift is just a company starting out, but both have had issues. So the HTC Vive is more back on track, let's say. Some of the ordering issues were due to credit card billing problems and stuff like that. But everyone who has gotten them is saying that it works pretty well. The experiences are cool, although maybe lacking some long-term killer games. But yeah, you're looking forward to yours, Jeff. Both Jeff and Scott, did you order the Rift, right?
I ordered a Rift, and at this point I'm questioning what I should do given the delays. I mean, I think I'm 2 months from when they told me originally, and it keeps changing. And if it changes a third time, I'm probably going to cancel it and get a Vive, and which is really too bad. It doesn't mean I don't want or don't think that the Oculus isn't going to be something great. I have fully expected to be great at what it does. But I hate this thing. It's not that I can't wait. I just hate that I'm being told that this thing I thought I was supposed to have in May, I'm not going to get told. Yeah,
it's like Christmas is next week. And then you get to the next week and you say, wait. So in 3 weeks,
Christmas is canceled. No Christmas for you.
It's crap. Yeah, that is what it feels like a little bit. So all my friends getting Vives or who already got their Oculuses, I'm, you know, incredibly jealous and wish I had it. And I'm, to speak to your whole thing about killer apps, my expectation going into this is that there wouldn't really be any right off the bat, that it would take a while, that would be mostly impressive sort of tech demos. And I think I'm okay with that, because what I'm most interested in VR is not finished, polished, complete games. Those are interesting to me, but it's not my main focus. My main focus is what are the experiences I'm going to have with this thing that I cannot have in any other way. And that stuff's going to come over time. It's going to come through weird indie developments that no one's thinking of right now. It's it's not going to be EA with the first greatest thing. It's going to be them, you know, trying to catch up to somebody else's wacky idea. It'll probably come from you know, kind of more of a grassroots effort. So it's that stuff, visiting places I'll never see and seeing worlds that can't exist and stuff like that's more interesting to me than, you know, Eve Valkyrie or, you know, most gamey games that have been shown so far.
Very reasonable. Jeff, I guess you're the person that has been the most excited about VR that I've heard, at least in the, in my environment, in the podcasting and, online. That hasn't soured you on the, expectation, I guess I was going to say the experience, but.
No, I'm definitely, in Scott's camp of like, you know, just waiting for Christmas, and Christmas keeps getting postponed, which is a real big bummer. But it's still Christmas, you know, it still feels like it's going to be Christmas when it finally is Christmas. It's just, I ordered my Oculus. I was sitting there as soon as it went on sale and was refreshing and trying to get through, and the website kept crashing. And I finally got my order in 12 minutes after it went on sale. And now I have been told that end of May is when I should expect my Oculus, which is a full 2 months, 2 months after the thing was supposed to have quote unquote launched. And that's very disappointing. You know, if you can't fill that amount of orders when you have so much lead time, I mean, these orders were being placed in February. This is not, it should not have been a surprise to them how many they needed to fill. And the communication has been poor. There's this vague thing about component shortages, but it's like, you know, how do you not know that when you have such a long build up to the release? And it just seems like it's been handled very poorly, and it is very frustrating. But I do think these experiences are going to be worth the wait. Yes, at the beginning we're not getting the type of long AAA experiences that I hope we end up getting soon, but that really has more to do with the fact that developers are just starting with this technology, and they really have to completely relearn all of the things that they take for granted in games. They have to relearn how to do cameras. They have to relearn how to progress a story forward and not make you backtrack, because it feels weird in VR to have to like twist your head around and go back where you came from. And all these really interesting lessons that are being learned because this is a completely new technology. And I find that very exciting, because I think that's going to really rewrite the rule book in a really exciting way. And we're not going to get, as Scott mentioned, we're not going to get just the same old experiences over and over. We're going to get some new things happening. And I got a chance this week actually to go to Insomniac Studios, the guys who make Ratchet & Clank and a bunch of other stuff. And they just announced three – well, one had already been announced, but they announced two more VR exclusive games for the Oculus. And some really exciting, interesting stuff. And this is from a big AAA developer. And, you know, Edge of Nowhere is this – really familiar third-person action game that feels like a Tomb Raider or a Uncharted type game, but done in VR. And VR makes it more exciting and more present. You know, when you jump over a chasm, it's crazy because you look down and you see how far you could fall, and it feels like you're really there. And they had this other game, Feral Rights, which is it's like a Zelda or a Darksiders, but you get to transform into this monster. And again, it's a third-person action game. So it's games that they're used to making, but done in VR. And I think it's really exciting. And I am ready to have these brand new experiences and feel something that's fresh and exciting in the video game space.
And yeah, feel too. Something. Finally, I can feel something.
I understand.
I think it's very... as gamers and as enthusiasts of anything, I think it's always that there are a few moments every few years where you feel like there's a potential for something new and different and powerful, and VR definitely has that potential. And I think it's cool to get excited about stuff, right? There is an inherent positivity, joy. Yeah, you're exactly. Thank you. A joy in getting excited all together and thinking, yes, this is going to be awesome, right? And that definitely is there for VR. Exactly as you're saying, what I like to compare it to is the era of video games when we got into 3D, where it took like 2 or 3 years for developers to figure out where to place the camera and how to handle the 3D worlds. And that took a while. People forget now, but games used to be graded and ranked on like how good the camera placement was, and you know whether or not it would get stuck in the background or that kind of thing. And I'm sure it's going to be the same thing for VR for a while. Those manufacturing issues, though, make me think. Yet, I mean, some listeners start making fun of me because I always say I think Sony has a leg up on all of this, and you'll see. And Sony is going to be, you know, selling so many of those. I think that's also something that Sony is used to, is manufacturing large scale consumer products, and they're going to be on the shelves everywhere. I think that is yet another reason why Sony, I think, is better placed in that race than the others, even though the product is arguably technically inferior.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to say, for me, more than the technical inferiority side of it, there's the problem I'm going to have with the Sony, and I want the Sony, and I actually think I'm kind of with you on its potential to be more mass market. For me, it's more attractive as these guys know retail. They've been shipping game consoles and high demand products for years and years and years. I don't expect weird rookie delayed shipping, part shortage type vagaries from them. So that's their advantage for me. The disadvantage is I just don't see the weird, like, underground strangeness that's going to come out of these other two. These other two are going to inspire guys in their garages, two man teams to do things that we never thought of. And Sony's got a relatively closed system. They're open to third-party developers, but they're not really interested in kind of the wacky stuff you have to install weird and sideload in a funny way and make functional and really, you know, really get down and dirty and get your hands dirty the way both Vive and Oculus are going to allow people to get. And it's like the difference between PCs and consoles. It sort of carries up. So that's my current sort of view of that landscape.
I'm curious what you'd say. I'm totally with you on that, but I actually think that may end up being a very positive thing for VR, because I think if really the way most people get into VR is in a closed system, that hopefully Sony is smart enough to really buckle down and say, hey, we are not going to certify anything on this thing that gives people nausea, that, you know, dips below a certain frame rate, that, you know, that they can really preserve a very positive experience for the end user. I think that may end up being a good thing, because all that sideloaded fun stuff that you and I are excited to do also is fraught with peril, you know, in this space. For the sort of end experience.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's funny, in light of that, what we know is coming with not that we know this for sure, but the Sony's at least considering bringing PSVR to PCs. And in doing so, they're kind of opening themselves up to that. So they could have it both ways. They could have their cake and eat it too. They basically could have their closed controlled system as the flagship method, but also people could hack around and dork around with this thing on PCs if that's how they position it. I don't know that they will.
But yeah,
big deal, and the price is so much lower that, you know, that's actually kind of a huge deal if they follow through with that.
Yeah, it was a very non-committal mention in passing in an interview. I think it's interesting that they're considering it, and if they did bring it to the PC, it would be a pretty big deal. I also think, however, that the issue is the market is going to be way too small for, you know, the other devices for a while, for at least this year and possibly longer. And so those developers that are going to develop successful stuff, I think they're going to bring all of them to all of the devices, and including the PlayStation, if Sony lets them. And if they're, you know, compelling experiences, then they will. I don't think there are going to be long-term exclusives. Maybe if Oculus starts doing first-party stuff, and maybe if Valve starts doing, some Valve game sequel, possibly in VR. But
they're already doing first-party stuff. I mean, that's all the stuff that was announced at Insomniac is exclusive to the Oculus. There's already hacks to play any Oculus game on Vive, and evidently Oculus has said they consider that a hack and they're going to put an end to it, which is a little bit of a bummer. But I think you're fundamentally correct in the sense that you know, all of these developers probably are going to want to support as many of these platforms as possible, but there will definitely be exclusives, especially from Sony, who, you know, has first party developers on their, you know, that will be making stuff just for their system. So there'll be a little bit of that, but I think you're fundamentally correct. And honestly, as a fan of the technology and somebody who wants it all to succeed, I think anything that can make this catch on and make people realize that it's really, really cool is a positive.
Yeah. And I meant for, you know, the little two people team that are going to be developing stuff in their garage and that are going to find out this is awesome in VR. Those, I think, are going to be on most platforms. But yeah, anyway, no, all right. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just going to say, I hope so. I hope that there's not equity across platforms, but as much as there was so much talk in the early days of this that, oh, we're all working together and sharing ideas and we don't want a format war, I smell one coming. And like this thing with Vive, you know, being able to play the Oculus games and Oculus reacting as, oh, they've hacked the thing and now we're going to be pissed. And that starts to sound like formats to me. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Sony is not going to be, you know, playing nice with anyone. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's starting to become big money. So I don't think it's going to be a format war for sure. And as you know, in those nascent industries, it always is. You start out, you know, inspired by everyone else, and then people start getting entrenched, and then there's a format war, and then a couple of them win out, because we're only talking about those, but there are a bunch of others, like lower end mobile devices as well. There are going to be, in 2, 3, 4 years, there are going to be 2 or 3 left, and that's what we're going to be playing with. But yeah, playing and doing other things as well. All right, let's move on from VR to talk about a bunch of Blizzard news. This is old news, but it's become new again because basically it's happening next week. It's the release of Whispers of the Old Gods on Hearthstone. It's April 26th. I know, Scott, you're not the biggest Hearthstone fan. You play here and there. Jeff, you mentioned you play sometimes. Are you excited about the Old Gods Whispers?
Certainly looks very cool. I've often said that I really only have room in my life for one Blizzard game at a time because they are all consuming. And so right now that means Heroes of the Storm. So I have put Hearthstone aside a bit for myself, and I play Heroes of the Storm. In fact, I was playing right before we started recording.
did I take you away from a Heroes session? I'm sorry.
Oh, my team. We had the game won, and the throws, my goodness. So it was probably best that I stopped playing because I was getting a little frustrated. But I'm excited. I love the fact that Blizzard and the team that is working on Hearthstone is putting out so much content so quickly and iterates so fast and is so responsive. They really, between this and Heroes of the Storm, they really have completely rewritten the rules for what a Blizzard game is as far as how quickly updates happen and how quickly new content is released. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm very excited about everything that's going on in that particular game space. But the fact that Hearthstone is bringing out formats is probably the thing that will get me back into the game, Patrick, because my biggest hang-up has been, you know, if I'm not actively in all the time and playing like some kind of hardcore freak, I feel like I'm behind a billion cards. I'm behind a bunch of expansions. The content is fast and furious with that game, which is good. That's what we want. But I've always feel like I'm behind the eight ball and I can't compete, or somebody's got a better deck than me, and it drives me nuts. And Standards goes a long way, or Formats rather, goes a long way to fixing that for me.
Yeah. So
I'm excited.
For people who don't know, there are going to be basically two formats, one with a limited number of cards called Standard, which is going to include cards from basically the past year and a half, 2 years, and Wild, which is going to be the format where any card is usable. So that's going to happen on April 26th. I'm looking forward to it for sure. And there are, you know, it's going to be easier to get into it. And I haven't played too much for a while, so I'm going to play again at that point, especially since the beta for Overwatch is shutting down the day before on April 25th. Beta for Overwatch goes away, and it will come back for the open beta on May 3rd. So it's, you know, it's just a little bit over a week. May 3rd for people who have pre-ordered or pre-purchased the game, and May 5th for everyone. That's going to be for a few days on all three platforms, PC, PS4, and Xbox One. But yeah, it's going away, and really, just like the first time the beta went away, I'm wondering what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to walk aimlessly in the streets of Japan. I'm going to be, you know, lost, and people are going to have to care for me for everything. My life will have no aim, no goal. Scott, I know you're Jeff, I think you didn't get into Overwatch, which I think is a failing on your part. But Scott,
I think you're probably right.
Scott, you're pretty into it, although not as much as you should. But yeah, you're pretty into it. I'm guessing you're devastated by the fact that you're not going to be able to play for a week.
If by pretty into it you mean I play at least a couple times a day, then yes, I'm into it. I love that game, and I am so excited for retail release. And the only time, it's funny, the only time during the beta that I haven't touched it in the 9 or so months that we've had it is during that free beta weekend over the weekend, last weekend. There was this influx of like popular Twitch people who are, you know, Cloud9 CSGO players that were just in their smurfing accounts and playing with their friends and just wrecking new people who'd never tried the game before. And it really bothered me at a sort of a fundamental moral level that those guys would do that and stream it so brazenly. It really pissed me off. But outside of that, it's my most anticipated game of the year. I freaking love it. I can't wait to play more. And you know, I knew it was going to end at some point, but it's really not that far for pre-orders. And the fact that we're getting Tracer and Heroes tomorrow is getting me plenty to do before then. But between those two games, and that's the other reason Hearthstone just kind of sits. Like Jeff, I mean, I'm trying to get this and Overwatch in, but between those two games, I don't have the time.
Do you want to hear the worst thing possible, Scott?
Yeah.
The new WoW expansion is scheduled to drop mere days before my child is due, my first child.
I know.
How is a person supposed to function?
You're about to exit. Let's see. You're in full adult release. You're about to exit that. Go back into alpha mode, and then enter beta. And then you'll get about high school age for the kid. You'll be about to release again. Now everything about your life's about to change, and that's going to be really interesting to see what you're able to squeeze in there.
Dude, I just realized that today. I logged on to Heroes of the Storm, and they have that splash page on the new, you know, on the launcher, and it said Legion. Legion release date. And I was like, wait a minute. I didn't realize, like, I've been there for every WoW expansion for 10 years. I've been there. On day one, I've been, you know, clocking the hours. It's all over for me. It's all over.
Yeah, well, that kind of game, I don't know how well that game coexists. I mean, so when WoW came out in 04, I had a 4-year-old, a 7-year-old, and she was 10, I guess, at the time. So they were old enough to sort of be somewhat autonomous, and I kind of could get some game time in. It's much easier for me now on the other side of it. They're all a little bit older, but that changes everything. I mean, it's all for the good and all for the better, but it must feel weird to know that in 11 years of a game that you've loved and gone to every expansion regularly, that this one may represent that Warlords may have represented your last real attempt to really go for it.
It's crazy, man. I'm a little freaking out. I'm freaking out a little bit.
I love that you're freaking out about having a kid, not because you're having a kid, but because it's gonna eat up your WoW time.
I'm gonna only be able to play games that have a pause button.
Oh my god! But so Scott, tell me, what I hear from everyone is that in the first few weeks or months, it's really, you know, it's the lump, you put it on somewhere in a box and it sleeps, and sometimes it wakes up and you have to feed it, but it's not too demanding. Is that the case, or
here's the deal, and I'm 100% confident that this is going to happen with Jeff, because Jeff has the things Jeff likes. Jeff loves video games. He loves, you know, film. He loves all the things he loves. And what you end up doing is it kind of, in the early days, yeah, they're just like these beings of chaos, and you have to, you know, they're pooping and they're eating constantly, and you don't know why they're crying at three, and all those things are true. But as they start to grow up, even at a very young age, right away they'll be in your lap watching you play a video game. And before you know it, they're two and want to use the controller. And before you know it, they're playing it better than you are. And before you know it, they're as into video games as you are. And before you know even that, you have an 18-year-old who's going to a university studying how to be an animator in video games. So my point is, it all works out in the end. It seems like this long, drawn-out time and that it's going to kill your vibe, but it really won't. It might kill you.
It doesn't help me for the Legion launch, Scott.
I'm going way big picture here, obviously. Short term is a little tricky. But
that's three expansions down the line, Scott.
You know what? You're going to be able to have a unique experience here that none of the rest of us have. You're going to be in the VR, the brand new, exciting VR world, and this thing you can put on your head at any time, but you're not going to be able to unless the other adult, the team member, the wife is around to make sure the kid's okay, because now you're in a place where you can't see what's going on. That is a wholly unique experience.
Or you just put some sensors somewhere and you have a little VR baby on the corner of your eye that you can check, and if something happens.
That'd be great. Awesome. If they could, in virtual reality, it turns the poop into, like, you know, rainbows. But no, that's another reason why the Oculus delay and the Vive delay were so heart crushing, because I was like, I have a precious little time here.
Yeah, the clock's ticking, man. You gotta.
My life is ending in a few months. Come on.
Yeah.
I think VR babies are gonna be fine. You're gonna be okay. It's gonna be perfect, and hopefully you will still have time to play. But taking it just a little bit shorter term. You're not into Overwatch, Jeff. However, as Scott mentioned, Tracer is releasing for Heroes like tomorrow. Yeah. As a non-Overwatch fan, which, you know, I don't understand how that's possible. Are you excited about Tracer?
No, I mean, I think Scott and I were sitting close to each other, or I don't remember. I think we were nearby when Overwatch was first announced at BlizzCon. And the first thing I thought when Overwatch was announced was, like, look at all these awesome characters that are going to be able to be brought into Heroes of the Storm.
In fact, this is true. You were sitting in front of me and you said those words. At some point, you either turned around or we talked after and you said, they're all going to be in Heroes. And
I don't care about new games. I'm just excited about new characters for my other game. I'm very excited about Tracer. I'm really excited, especially because her mechanics are so different. It's just going to be really interesting. And I saw a tweet from Dustin Browder today basically saying that she has, like, no health because she's so powerful and can move around so fast and has the ability to have her, you know, her ultimate right when you start playing. You don't have to level up to get her ultimate. There are so many different mechanics with her that she's basically a more glass cannon than even the glass cannons in the game now. So it's going to be a real interesting character to try.
What she represents to me is also something unique in that game, or from a more philosophical point of view, I like to watch Blizzard do these kind of strange insertions into any other games where they kind of break the wall a little bit and say, all right, we're taking a shooter where reload is the mechanic. There's no mana. There's no, you know, all these other, like, concepts kind of fall away, and you're left with either trying to wedge her in and make her into something she's not, or really honor her origins and figure out a way to still make it fit. And to watch them do that, and hopefully tomorrow to see them succeed at doing that, is so fascinating to me from just sort of a design development standpoint and how they tackle these challenges. And they always seem to be up to task to pull it off. So very jazzed to see what she ends up doing to the meta, how she ends up being in the game, or if she gets, you know, Lunara'd and kind of forgotten a little bit. Who knows? I guess we have to wait and see tomorrow.
And so she will be available probably by the time you listen to this or a few hours later. As we were saying, Hearthstone expansion on the 26th, that's about a week away. We have Overwatch, the open beta on May 3rd and actually 5th if you haven't pre-ordered or pre-purchased the game. The game itself launches May 24th, so you won't have too long to wait. Tracer in Heroes, possibly another hero coming after that from Overwatch. Nothing has been announced yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did to coincide with the release. you know, we talk about Blizzard often, and we're all Blizzard fans, and I used to work at the company, but I think there's so much happening in the company that it's definitely warranted. The one thing you mentioned, we discussed the launch of Legion on August 30th. The Demon Hunter class is going to be available a little bit before that for you to enjoy if you pre-ordered the game. I think the announcement for the launch was a little bit underwhelming. It's something that jumped at me. With all of the active communication that we're getting on the other teams, on Heroes and Hearthstone and Overwatch, the fact that they announced this without making a video, without having someone saying anything, maybe it's, you know, under-promising, over-delivering something, but it was basically just a tiny blog. I thought it was, for me, it's just another element of proof that I think there's a communication issue with the WoW team. It's, they're not getting us excited as much as we should. And
well, I have a theory about this, and we may have discussed it on the instance, you and I don't remember. So if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. But my theory goes like this. The game's 11 years old. Warlords of Draenor came out, and to much fanfare, so all the fanfare you feel like you're missing now, you got there. And it was well received in its first, you know, few weeks. Things got weird, less patches, not everyone's enamored with some of the systems. Maybe at the, you know, they have their biggest loss of users ever. You know, things just kind of fizzled real quick. And I don't even blame Warlords for that as much as I do. This is an 11-year-old game, and you can only blow their minds for so long. So what I think this, and this isn't even really that conspiratorial, but I think what they're doing is trying to temper those expectations and maybe over-deliver a little bit by being a little bit softer with everything. It's like, well, we'll just, you know, here's our date. Get excited. Here's a tweet. Here's a blog post. Yeah, otherwise, you know, they've been pretty quiet. Now, whether or not that's a good thing or a smart thing in the long run could totally be argued, and I happen to agree with you that that team is way less communicative than the other teams, and I miss that about them. However, it may be part of a plan to not try to set anyone's expectations so high that an 11 or 12-year-old game cannot meet.
Yeah.
Does All that right. make sense? Well,
yeah, it does. Let's hope that's it and not just, you know, we don't have anyone who can speak in front of a camera. I mean, I know they have people who can. It's just that they're just busy making the game and they don't have time for all this other nonsense, hopefully. Sure. All right, last bit of news for Blizzard. BlizzCon is happening November 4th and 5th. I will be there. I think Scott will be there. So yeah, we're super hyped for that as always.
And I'll be there.
And Jeff will be there too, of course.
I may have a child on my hip, but I'll be there.
All right. So that's it.
I hope so. I want to see the baby. I hope you have a baby in the stroller and all that. That would be amazing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I would love to have him meet Uncle Scott.
Yeah, Kim would freak out. Oh my gosh, she's already way excited.
You need to start getting them into, you know, Blizzard fanboys or girls pretty early on. So I think that's completely right. Warranted.
Yeah, give him a little Murloc hat or something. You know, that'd be great. Exactly.
Oh, cosplay Murloc baby.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Lurk. Yeah, exactly.
He basically talks the same like that already. Anyway.
And just like Murky, he'll leave a big slime ball on the floor and some sort of weird pufferfish looking thing. So,
All right. I think now you have to do it. I think it's a challenge that you have accepted. All right, let's move on from Blizzard. We had a bunch. Well, we do have still a bunch of releases for this month outside of those games we mentioned. Quantum Break was released a couple of weeks ago. Dark Souls was released last week. I don't think any of us played Dark Souls 3. It's been getting awesome reviews, though. It's basically the best of the series, or that's just about the best of the series. Star Fox Zero is releasing April 22nd in the US at least. Dark Souls, pretty cool. The best mix of 1 and 2 with some elements of Bloodborne. I didn't really get into Bloodborne. I tried it, played it for a few hours, had that amazing drill sergeant analogy that I gave to Scott on this very show, which I think summarized the game pretty well. Didn't get into Dark Souls 3. However, Jeff, you played Quantum Break. And so my impression about Quantum Break is, yeah, it's okay. Seems fun, but not earth-shattering?
Yeah, it was a disappointment for me. I'm a big fan of Remedy games. I really love Alan Wake, and I was a huge fan of the Max Payne series. I really, really enjoy the games that this is the, you know, sort of the, that predate this game from that studio. And I was really excited seeing the level of ambition that Quantum Break has going for it. I mean, it's not only just a video game, it's a video game and sort of a television series all at the same time. And you go back and forth as you play it.
Is the series integrated in the game, or is it something outside of the game you have to go watch?
Well, it's both. I mean, you will download it separately. It's a streamed television show that's on Xbox Live, but the game will seamlessly transition into those episodes at certain points. So you'll play, and then it'll transition. You'll make a decision, and then it'll transition into this fully live action television show. With all the same actors that are in the game, that, you know, their digital likenesses are in the game, playing the same roles, and you get like a 20-25 minute television show where you sit back and you set the controller down and you watch it, and then you go right back into the game, which is, I think, a really interesting concept. In actuality, it doesn't really work all that well for me, because, you know, I sit down to play a video game, I kind of want to play a video game. When I sit down to watch a TV show, I kind of want to watch a TV show. I don't want to be have that be imposed on me which one of those two things I'm doing. So the game itself, it plays really fun in the action-y, shooty bits. You have all these time travel powers that you get to do that are really cool visually and actually impact the firefights in a really kinetic, exciting way. But a lot of the game isn't that. A lot of the game is just sort of wandering around puzzle stuff and a lot of cutscenes that are in-engine, which are cool, but it's like, well, if I'm watching a cutscene in the game, and then I cut to a live-action TV show that's basically a cutscene, why did I watch a cutscene in the game? Like, why aren't all the cutscenes live-action? Or it just feels very strange, and the game itself is... Sorry?
Oh, I said, does it feel awkward?
Yeah, it's awkward, and the game itself isn't strong enough, I think, to just carry that over and smooth those rough edges out for me, which is a shame, because I think the shooting stuff is fun, but it the game as a whole just feels very, very cobbled together from a lot of disparate parts that don't really gel into a cohesive whole.
You know, what this makes me think of is the Uncharted series, where arguably you do have some significant gameplay, and you also have, it relies heavily on storytelling, you know, in engine, sure, but it's still, there are scenes, I guess they're 5 minutes long at the most, but scenes where you just sit back and watch what's happening. I think in that game, it's exceptionally well written. It's funny and engaging. I'm wondering which part of it doesn't work as well in Quantum Break, or maybe it's completely different and it's just the image I'm building in my head. But is there a relation there? Is there something to be said, or is it completely different?
Yeah, I mean, I think the story is actually pretty cool. I mean, I'm a sucker for time travel stories. I like that particular brand of sci-fi. And there's some fun science fiction concepts here. There's some cool, like, you know, messing with your head as far as what happened when and who was where and is he time traveling or is he not. That stuff is all handled pretty cool. But the quality of the live action TV series, I don't think compares with the best of what's on television. It feels more like, you know, sort of a bad deep cable show. As far as the quality level of the live action stuff, which is unfortunate, because juxtaposing that right next to CG cutscenes, which are in-engine cutscenes, which is really what they are, which look really great. I mean, the graphics in the game are very, very good until you compare them to the real world. You know, when you have the actor who was digitized, right next to the actor in real life, you know, photographed with a live action movie camera, you really are shown the limits of digitization. You really are.
Right.
You really notice, you know, as great as video game graphics are, they don't look like real life. And, you know, it almost does a disservice to how good the game looks by putting it right up next to the real thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that does make sense. It's a little bit disappointing, especially since Quantum Break was the, you know, it is one of the huge exclusives that Microsoft has for the Xbox One and actually the PC, even though the PC launch hasn't been as stellar as some might have hoped. But yeah, so the fact that it's, and I was looking forward to it as well. I just happened to be in Japan now that, so I can't really play it, but it feels like it's not, I'm not missing too much, which is disappointing in itself.
Also real quick on that, it feels like that game when it was announced originally with the Xbox One announcement, they had really grand plans for what that would be and other experiences like it and what the Xbox One was capable of in meshing real live action and real gameplay, and like it was a much broader idea. And then as the year went on, people started leaving and suddenly that department got smaller, and I can't remember her name, but the one that was sort of leading that charge moved to a smaller department, and it just seemed less and less important on their, you know, the side that was trying to take the two entertainment worlds and put them together, of which this game would be the great beacon of. And then it just became, well, it's a game and we're making it and Remedy's great and here's your game. And I don't know if my perception of that is 100% accurate, but I'll bet there are stories that people would tell if we could get the right people.
I think there's some of that for sure. I also think to an extent, this is just speculation on all of our parts now, but I also think that they tried to do this and sort of they realized what Jeff was saying, that it doesn't gel as well as they hoped. That when you put them together, some of it looks weird just for because of the fact that it's standing close to the, you know, it's as if I was standing next to, let's say, Colin Farrell. You're like, yeah, Patrick looks pretty good. He's a, you know, handsome person. And then you look at Colin Farrell and you're like, oh, well, okay, well, he's no that. So there right. you go. And it doesn't work as well as you think it would initially.
I like how you picked Colin Farrell. I think that would have been my first go-to. It's an unsurprising pick.
Wait. Am I confusing two people?
No, Colin Farrell's attractive.
Right. He is. Yeah. He's very attractive, but he's oddly specific is all I would say.
I guess, Maybe I should have picked. Wait, who would you have picked?
I think the obvious one everybody would say would be Brad Pitt, right? But you went with a much more eclectic pick, and I give you props for that.
Thank you. Actually, you know who I think looks really, really good? Do you watch that show, Madam Secretary? Sorry, this is a tangent. But
no. Let's talk about hot guys, though, for a while. Okay, go on.
So, Madam Secretary, I think it's a pretty good show. There is the guy who plays his wife is really yummy. I'm just, you know, he's Tim Daly. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Oh, Tim Daly, like from like Wings. This is the guy.
I don't know where he's from, but
yeah, no, he was from Wings. Yeah, no, he's it's funny. My man crush is also a Tim. For me, it's Timothy Oliphant from.
Oh, right. He's got that
dream. Boat.
Thanks for the reminder. My favorite TV show is no longer on the air. Damn it. Right.
Yeah, no. Timothy. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that I could definitely not stand close to Timothy Oliphant. Oh my God. He is so. And he's gruff. He's like, you know what? Full circle, Jeff, you should try McCree in Overwatch. He's basically the gruff Timothy Oliphant character in a game.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Now, I played McCree, I tried them all. I gave them all a shot. It's not that I haven't found the character that works for me. I was playing, you know, I was playing Mercy a lot. Everybody says play Mercy because it's, you know, it's easy to play Mercy. It's just first person shooters in a competitive level, just not my jam.
Now you're just making me upset, Jeff. Let's move on.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about Tom Hardy because he's my. Never
mind. Ooh.
Hey, two Tims and one Tom. I think you know.
There you go.
Enter the Gungeon is an indie hit. It's sort of a roguelike thing that I don't know much about, but apparently it's awesome. And Scott, you love it. And Stardew Valley is another indie hit that it's got 1 million copies sold. Oh my God. It's basically, what's this silly 3DS game like where you have to bring flowers to your neighbors?
Well, it's a combination of two games. So I think the inspiration is clearly from two things. One is from Harvest Moon, an old Super NES title that was more of a farming simulator type thing. And then Animal Crossing, which is a more recent development, or certainly, you know, GameCube and forward. I think even the N64 had one in Japan. But anyway, the this is kind of the weird love child of those two games, and it borrows much from both. What's amazing about it isn't that it's as well thought out or as in depth as it is, because it really is impressive. If this was a team of 10 or 15 people, or even an old school 100 person team for Nintendo back in like 95, it would be impressive on those levels. It's one freaking guy, does everything, music, programming, all of it. He's some kind of super genius. And if you like those games at all, then you get completely roped in, and you can't wait for the next day so you can see how your harvest did, and then you got to go into town and meet the dude who's going to give you the thing. And there's all kinds of like weird wizards and like supernatural stuff in there. There's a combat element. You go in these caves and you mine for stuff, and you have currencies of various types, and you spend them on things, and you're just always improving stuff. Some kind of weird alien conspiracy going on. And at the core of it, you're just trying to plant turnips in the spring and tomatoes in the summer, and like you're farming crap. And there's just a really, really good loop to it. It reminds me of the Civilization, just one more turn kind of problem. And it's just, in this case, it's one more day, because at the end of the day, you go to sleep and you get up and you go do it again. And you always feel compelled to keep going because there was something you just left that you can't wait to see how it went the next morning. It's a real booger of a game, that thing. And he deserves all the credit. It's insane that one guy put that game together. I can't believe that. And I love that we live in a world where that can happen. You know, I say it all the time, but indie hits like this are proof that single visionaries have a path. If they really have something special to do, they can blow everyone's minds. And you know, part of this is a lot of people love those titles I mentioned and want a new Harvest Moon style experience because nobody's really given it to them, including Harvest Moon. So, you know, why not? Why not this guy? Why not now? Why not PC? That's what I say.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Anyway, it's really good.
Yeah, that this game is out on PC as well. That's kind of a thing that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago, I don't think, or even 3 years ago, maybe. But Eric Barone is the name of the dude who is making that game. So props to him. 1 million copies sold. That's pretty impressive. It just came out really like well. 3 weeks ago, too, so...
Yeah, he did really well with it, and I hope he continues to... I mean, it just showed real promise. To me, it's like maybe not quite the breadth of Minecraft's impact, but it's that same feeling of, oh my gosh, a guy did this? Whoa. Mm. And then to see where he goes next, like Jonathan Blow style, will be really interesting. As far as Enter the Gungeon goes, it is... And this is why I think Jeff's going to want to play it. It's basically Rogue Legacy, but with guns. Top
yeah,
down,
it looks awesome.
Pixelated. Have you played it? Oh my gosh, dude!
I played it at PAX. I played it at PAX. The last PAX I went, PAX South, and it's awesome. Honestly, though, Scott, I'll be real honest with you. I'm kind of a little sick of that sort of Devolver Digital art style. That like retro art style is a bit
pixelated,
of a turnoff for me.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's I'm not going to disagree with that. I think it's a little overplayed at this point. I don't think it's going to stop it. It's like the zombie genre. It's like we're all a little tired of it, but they're just going to keep... It's going to keep happening. So I don't know if that's good or bad. But I wouldn't disagree. Like a different approach could be fun here. It doesn't have to all look like my SNES is, you know, yeah, doing. That aside, the loop in that is really good in the way that Rogue Legacy is. You go into these randomly generated places, you blow up a bunch of crap, very creative, funny stuff, like these weird bullet creatures that are basically bullets with faces, and the shotgun ones shoot shotguns and they look like a shotgun shell, and the little bullets do different things, and the bosses are kind of ridiculous and awesome, and there's just a lot to love about it. My only two complaints is the co-op is local only and lets you only be you can only be one of the characters if you're the co-op person getting in, whereas the other person has access to these four other classes. That's kind of annoying and weird, kind of a weird Mario Galaxy kind of pick up the coins kind of way. It's not quite that bad, but and then the what was the other thing? Maybe that's it. Everything else about it I really, really adore. But you're not wrong. Like, we've been retroed to pieces, and this is the kind of game that you could have taken without any more overhead, could have taken a more unique approach to the visuals and come away with something a little less chunky. So, I kind of agree with that. But the gameplay itself is astoundingly good. It's really, really good. It's like fourth most streamed game on Twitch or something right now. It's crazy.
I have to agree with the retro, how did you put it? Retro to death. I'm sort of getting a little bit sick of it. I'm fine with some games being retro, but I think it's a little bit too much now. But all right, just a quick, Jeff, if you need to jet, just let us know. Just have a few additional tidbits.
Yeah, okay. I think maybe I will use the opportunity to head out. I appreciate it. Sorry, I have to go record the Slash film cast, but I appreciate being on. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for being here. Slash film cast, of course. DLC, if you want more Jeff talking about video games and board games. And of course, at Jeff Cannata on Twitter, 2N1T.
Correct.
Did I forget anything?
Well, there's like three other shows I do, but it's fine. That's plenty. I appreciate it.
right. I wasn't going to go the full Jeff catalog. You have to leave some of the mystery, you know, for people to discover. All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Guys. Have a good day.
Right,
see you, man.
Have a good night.
Bye. Oh, right. Night. I mean, I meant, you know, day for me, night for everyone else.
Morning. So I guess you're not jet lagged anymore, right?
Well, it's been 2 weeks. If I was still jet lagged, it would be kind of weird.
Let's talk to a Japanese doctor if you're still jet lagged after 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? We didn't. That is the weirdest mind path to take. We didn't talk about Heroes of the Dorm, which I wanted to mention and completely forgot. Yeah. And the reason I wanted to, this made me think of it, is that it made me think of what you said made me think of a Viagra ad that I saw while I was VPNing to the US for some reason. I can't remember, on CBS, I was watching something. Oh, no, right. I was watching a 60 Minutes report on hacking phones. And there was this Viagra ad that made me think of the American healthcare system, which made me think of the weirdness of Heroes of the Dorm, where people compete to get their tuition paid because it's not education is not free in the US. And that made me think of the Hunger Games, where people compete to get, you know, it's weird. And I understand how ridiculous this sounds. I know.
No, I love it. I love that you connected all these things, had a path for you in this like one continuous brain fart. That's amazing. I love it.
So, Heroes of the Dorm, just to say a couple of words about it, I thought the production quality was amazing. Really. And it was, you know, it was compelling and well done. And the new observer mode is stellar. It allows you to follow the action really quickly, really well. And, you know, I just wanted to mention the fact that I thought production quality was, I have never seen, and maybe I haven't watched enough of it, but I have never seen an esports event produced so well and so approachably. I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah, it was really good. I watched most of it and had a blast watching it. I only really have one complaint about the whole thing, and that's that ASU was so dominant.
ASU won everything, yeah.
They just won everything, and they won it so handily that it was like one of those Super Bowls where the other team just sucks. and the whole thing's such a blowout that it's not really that entertaining of a game, because it just was like, well, let's watch ASU destroy everybody. But it once again proved just the level of excitement that those games can provide is unmatched as far as esports, as far as I'm concerned. I loved it.
Yeah.
Had a really good time with it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to all the finals and all the other stuff coming up, the summer bracket stuff, and then the winter and all that. And then as we get up to, you know, BlizzCon, BlizzCon more and more is a esports event anyway, but I am all in on all that. I'm ready for more esports in my life.
Yeah, I'm getting more into esports, and mainly possibly because of the fanboyism in me for Blizzard esports. It's the one that I gravitate towards. But
I suspect that is my, you know, you and I love Overwatch, and we've been playing it a ton, and I wish if I could make out with Overwatch, I would. I suspect.
So I get Tom Daly, and you get Overwatch. That works.
Yeah, exactly. I will make out with a video game, and you can have a washed up actor from the 80s. Yeah. But I'm washed up.
Have you seen him in Madam Secretary? No, he is really grizzled, and he is okay. Anyway, sorry.
I hear he's really good, but my point is that Overwatch is going to get serious. Well, he wouldn't quite admit it on the show, but like serious esports treatment. And that is so exciting to me. I can barely stand to be next to myself right now. I'm so excited about that game.
All right. Very quick bits of news. Final Fantasy 15 has a launch date. That's September 30th. Titanfall 2 is going to be revealed in June, very likely at E3. I'm excited about that one. That's one of the ones I put in my list of the sequels I was looking forward to for this year. And so, yeah, that we had a teaser trailer which showed nothing. Well, it showed swords, which is cool. But yeah, looking forward to that. Orcs Must Die Unchained is available in open beta. If you want to try that out, go ahead. I love the initial Orcs Must Die, and I think that one looks nice. It's still a first-person tower defense, but mixed with MOBA elements. So that's
I played
really
it.
Fun.
It's okay. It's good. It's all right. I don't know. I came away a little disappointed. I think Overwatch is ruining me on other games that are supposed to be similar. And even this one had like, the E does this, and the shift does that, and the Q does that. Like, there's a very similar kind of structure to ultimate powers and things. And I got in there, and I started cranking away at it, and I went, you know, I could just be playing Overwatch right now. And I did. So I got out.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there are a bunch of games that some of them had been in development before even Overwatch had been announced, but they're getting lumped together as the hero shooters. There's Paladins, there's Battleborn, there's a bunch of others. I mean, even Orcs Must Die is kind of in the same category. None of them are, I mean, they're in the same ballpark, but some of them are extremely different. And talking about this, there's a 12-minute video for Battleborn, basically the introduction to the game for most people. It's going to release in just a couple of weeks. It's releasing May 3rd. And I don't know. It's Battleborn is that game where it feels like what... I don't want to be disparaging, and I hate that I don't love it more, the presentation. Maybe the game is awesome. I haven't even tried it, but the 12-minute bootcamp trailer makes it seem like, you know, there are all these different heroes, the different characters that are, it feels like they're trying to be different, but really they're just generic. Like, there's this one that I keep referring to, which is the penguin in a mech suit. And I mentioned it, I think, months ago when the character was introduced. It's like, it's going to be funny because it's a penguin and he's cute and cuddly, but he has this mech suit with giant guns. And it feels like it would have been funny 20 years ago or something. I don't know. It feels, I don't want to say lazy, because it certainly, it took a lot of work, and Gearbox is an awesome company that I love. But I think it's kind of the same for me as you with Overwatch. It's kind of, and maybe, you know, again, I want to be very clear. I haven't played Battleborn. Maybe when I play it, because I will, it's going to be awesome and incredible. But it feels like Overwatch is so polished in every way, and the community response has been... I mean, the development team has been so on point with their communication and the way they've crafted the game. It just works well for me. And it feels like it sort of dominates the other games in that quote-unquote category in the same way that maybe World of Warcraft dominated the other MMOs for so long, where you would try them and you would always compare every element of them to that game that you loved.
Right.
So
yeah, I'm having that problem. I played a little bit of Battleborn and was completely bored by it. And I don't know why. Because again, I think I actually kind of like character design in it. I just think that it's there's something uninspired about it. And I don't know what that is. I can't really put my finger on it. I also want to try Paladins, but my initial blush on Paladins is that it looks very... Honestly, it looks like an Overwatch clone in almost every way. And that one, there's no way that this was not inspired by an Overwatch clone. There's a big tank character with a giant shield in front of them, and they walk out third person in front of it and block a bunch of damage. There's somebody with a bow that's always held sideways, a girl character in there. There's a mech character that sets up in a kind of mech position, sort of Bastion style. Like, if this game isn't directly trying to out Overwatch, then I will eat my hat.
I don't, you know, I really don't think so. The thing is, it It is a.
You could say that about Overwatch. You could say, "Oh well, they got turrets." It's like, oh,
no. The thing is, I think when you set up a game, an FPS in that way, which is based on heroes and they each have a role, and you try to give different things to do to different heroes, I think you end up having the same kind of archetypes. Like the big tanky guy, which puts out a shield, is not, you know, the most incredible thing to think up when you're thinking of a game like this. If you tell me they have a Symmetra-like character, that maybe, you know, there are some very specific characters like Tracer who can blink forward and then come back in time. Maybe that's a little bit more specific. I think the big tank and the turret are the kind of places you get to when you try to design a game that works in that space of post-MOBA FPS kind of game.
Yeah, no, you're right. And my bias is probably playing a huge role in this because Blizzard has never let me down. There's a measure of trust there that I don't have with these other guys yet. The one I'm kind of interested in that we didn't talk about is the one that Epic's making called...
Yeah, Paragon. Oh, I played it. Yeah. Paragon.
What'd you think of Paragon?
It is very epic in the name of the company sense, not in the adjective sense. It's very epic in it. All of the heroes are like badass. It's almost like, it's not as much as something like Gears of War, but it's certainly a very, like, everyone has to be the cool, awesome, like looking at you sideways character. And the other thing is it's incredibly MOBA. Like it is very, very much more than any of the other games in those categories. Paladin has a little bit of this, but not as much. It's a very different game from Overwatch, but it has some other issues. But Paragon is very, very much a MOBA. You have the lane, you have to push. The games take, you know, almost an hour if it goes long, but minimum of 30 to 35 minutes. And it didn't appeal to me because of that. I think it's very classic MOBA, but it's super well made. I think it's all of those games are going to find, maybe not all of them, but some of them are definitely going to find their crowd, who think that Overwatch is too something, to this or to that. But I think the thing that resonates with me for many of those is what you said. For them being uninspired, I think especially Paladins and Battleborn feel a little bit uninspired, and I think that's what you get when you don't have, you know, all the money in the world and all the time in the world taking that you can spend making this one game, right? You have a smaller team which is focusing on something very specific, so it's natural. But yes, I think that it does feel a little bit uninspired. So.
Yeah, I don't know. This feels like it's Armageddon and Deep Impact time. It's time for all these clony things to happen. And here's the one sad note or sub thing I'd say about this whole competition, and that is, in a way, it hurt them to be ahead of their time. But the guys over at Hi-Rez Studios, who currently are working on Smite, and Smite's kind of their main thing now, they did Tribes Ascension, what, 2-3 years ago now? Yeah. That game Tribes. Positioned now, like if this was the year Tribes was coming out again and bringing back all the old Tribes players, plus bringing in a new bunch of aspects, plus maybe focusing a little bit more on this unique character stuff, if that was the world Tribes was existing in right now, they would be the number one competition for Overwatch in my head.
Well, they're the ones doing Paladins. But
are they Paladins? Right. I thought they were. You're right. That is Hi-Rez.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, but you're right. I mean, Smite was basically that before it was a thing. And they're a little bit more MOBA-y, but still, it is that. And you know what? I hate being so... It feels like we're crapping on all of them. I don't think that's what we intend to do. It's just that it that's the way it feels now, being immersed in that world of Overwatch. Maybe things are going to work out differently in a few months and we're going to try all of those because of Overwatch and we get tired of it and we go, oh, I wonder what, you know, Battleborn is like nowadays or what Paladins is doing. But
shooters are about to make a big comeback, and I guess I'm pleased just about that in general, and everyone can fight about their favorite brand and we can get all Coke and Pepsi about it all people want to, but the idea that shooters are finding their way back and they're not just military Call of Duty business, that we've gone back to a more stylized science fiction approach, is delightful for me. And I can't get enough of it. So I say the more the merrier, and let's see what shakes out, and I'll play whatever's good.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's kind of like the VR talk we were having earlier with the format wars. Now we're having, you know, a bunch of games in the same genre, which was inspired by the prevalence of FPSs. And as you were saying, the post-MOBA. This is basically a post-MOBA world. Everyone is inspired by that as well. And there are way too many competitors in that space right now. There are maybe five or six. I think two or three are going to remain, and there are going to be players for all two or three, because obviously not everyone is going to like everything, and there are some people who don't like Overwatch. I don't know why. I don't understand the way their brains work.
How you can't love Overwatch? How is it possible? Game is so good in every way.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's a good place to end the show. The game is so good in every way. If you didn't get the message, we love Overwatch. So I think that's at least that has been made clear in this show. I want to thank God of Wine from the UK, who left a review on Pixels. He says, great podcast, and a bunch of other flattering things. So thank you so much. He says, it feels it's most suited for people who have grown up with games of old platforms, who enjoy reflecting on the experiences and the industry, not just playing them. Great stuff. Thank you so much, God of Wine. If you enjoy the show and want to help us out a little bit, please go to your podcast catalog of choice, be it at iTunes, or apparently it's coming to the Google Play Store soon. And I don't think I can submit Overwatch. I can submit Pixels to Google yet, because I don't have a US account. I'll check it out. But if you find it there, please go and leave a review. Help us out with a few stars or a good ranking thing, a good marking. It would be very kind of you, and it would help us out. So please do that if you want to. Thank you very much. Scott, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, gosh. best place is probably between the website at frogpants.com, where it just links to everything that's going on, or they can follow me at Scott Johnson on Twitter. And just put a note out there that upcoming, let's see, the 5th, I guess, of May is Free Comic Book Day. And every year I give free prints that I create. Myself and my daughter are now doing it. It's kind of a 4-year tradition where we send free artwork anywhere in the world to anybody who wants it, as a way of saying thanks for being fans of Frog Pants shows and all that sort of stuff. So there's no other reason. It's all free. We're not keeping anything or doing anything weird. We're just sending you free stuff. So if you're interested in that, just keep an eye on my Twitter @ScottJohnson, and details will be posted soon.
That is awesome. Give us the date again.
I think it's May 5th. I got to remember. Free Comic Book Day 2016. No, I'm pretty sure that's right, but I think May 5th, and I'll have something up before that so that people know what's going on. But actually, I can tell you. Oh, it's May 7th. Sorry, May 7th this year.
All right, cool. So at Scott Johnson on Twitter anyway.
Yeah.
For me, it's at NotPatrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can also find this show on FrenchSpin.com. And there is another one called The Phillies Club that you might enjoy. That is a show where we get people from different places in the world to get together and discuss stuff like the news and how they saw it from the past few weeks or months. It's always a good conversation. It's a great perspective on the way we think things are. I really think you would enjoy it. So go check it out. It's at FrenchSpin.com. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another one. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.